Guardians.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I don't know how I missed it yesterday. This is Levin Miller. But my heart is going out to those people in Jenny Street, man. And as a child born in Angleston, raised in Angleston, and still very much carry on the goings on of my life in and around the community of Angleston, I couldn't imagine losing not just my house, but my neighborhood, the block I grew up on. I'm a mini street boy, and I but for the grace of God is all that I could say in an instance like this, because I could very easily see Mrs. Roberts, Mrs. Smith, and Miller Yard being in the very same predicament. I could very easily see it. The boundaries that separate these three wooden houses, one of which I grew up in as a boy, the boundaries are so minute, they are almost non-existent for most of my life. Pallets, wooden pallets, separated the difference between the Roberts Yard and the Miller Yard. For almost all of my life, right? The Smith Yard and the Miller Yard separated by less than 50 feet, simply perimetered by a chain link fence. There is nothing that stops me to this very day from being the exact replica of Jenny Street. And so as a ghetto youth, as somebody who was raised in the Angleston community, I send with you all my prayers, man. That is, bad things ought never happen to people. I maintain that they certainly ought never happen on a Sunday. No one ever anticipates that havoc, mayhem, will visit their lives on Sundays. And so I, for whatever it is worth, hopefully if there are any efforts out there that are not polarized or overemphasized for gain, because I don't believe in the exploitation of the poor either. As a matter of fact, I think that Jesus is a friend of the poor, and if you exploit the poor, you will have a problem with Jesus. And if there is something happening out there that I can be a part of, I mean, I don't know in what facet I can. I don't even know what you offer people whose entire lives have burnt to the ground. I look at the picture of the man that's 73 years old, and my heart bleeds, because most people in their lives will only have an opportunity to build one house. To now ask people that we are almost certain are a little less than of average means to build a second house, and to ask some of them to do it as single mothers, to ask others of them to do it as men that have reached the age of 73, I say to you, my friend, that is a daunting task at the very least. And so my heart and my hope is with the people of Jenny Street, man. I please accept my greatest regrets, my greatest regards, as I trust this is a most difficult time for you people. And I'll end with this, you have to understand ghetto lifestyle, right? And I say ghetto with a great sense of glee in my voice, because I consider myself one of the original ghetto youths, right? And you have to understand that the displacement of a house fire in the inner city is something far more tragic than just a house fire. These houses, right? And let's not play crazy. All of us are nothing more than mere variations of E Street. So we have all either been in this position or associated in a position just similarly. I am the grandchild of a woman that had 18 children raised in one house. Imagine that house burning to the ground. That is the kind of instances we see when we look in the inner city community. And so you're talking about the displacement of 6 or 7 homes. You could very easily be talking about 70 people. Very easily. It is a catastrophe of mammoth capacity. And I think that is something that, as an island, particularly heavily, densely populated, where the majority of the Bahamians live on this one rock, every single Bahamian that can do something ought to do something. And although you may be like me and not be able to figure out what exactly you should do, if you are under the sound of my voice, man, see what you could do for the people through Jenny Street, man. These ghetto people, and I love them. And Jesus loved them. Anyway, that's not what I'm here to talk about today. He is back by popular demand. I don't know of anybody that has had that amount of popularity in requests, in actual verbal requests. Captain Neely joins me this morning. He is the longest serving member of the HMBS Flamingo. He is, I think it's official, he is the most decorated person in the Royal Bahamas Defense Force. He joins me again in the studio this morning as we go and we relive the day that was, that we now know to be May 10th. It is the incident we now call the Flamingo incident. Although something that is simply a page in the book of history, it is even greater than that, a page in the book of the life of people like now Captain Whitfield Neely, who was then Marine Seaman Whitfield Neely, and as a consequence, a gallantry medal holder for his role in the HMBS Flamingo. So, Skipper, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Levon. Good morning, Bahamas. Levon, I'm doing very well.
I have to say that the people have sent for you.
Really?
They have. They said, you've got to have Neely back. I don't know. You're a very popular guy. So
I don't know. That I guess the topic must be interesting.
And a lot of people do not know, sir. Yeah. A lot of people do not know. So I've decided that this morning, I will open the lines this morning. Mm-hmm. I want them to just give me about 20 minutes with the Skipper. And then, Skipper, we will take some calls and find out from the people what it is that they want to know.
But with your permission, Levon.
Sure.
I would like to say to the mothers.
Okay.
And grandmothers. Mm-hmm. Surrogate mothers. Mm-hmm. All persons acting in the capacity as a mother. Happy Mother's Day. Because I find in this studio, time flies.
Ah, indeed.
Right? So I don't wish to be remiss and not mention it.
No problem.
Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers in the Bahamas, and especially my wife, Raynell mm-hmm. Neely, my mm-hmm. sisters, Juanita, Judy, and Diane, mm-hmm. and to all of those other cousins and aunts and uncles.
Listen,
not
now,
uncles,
you,
I'm sorry.
I know you're Anglican, right? But in the Baptist church, they teach you, you never start calling names.
No,
right? In the Church of God, you never start calling names.
No, you're right.
You just
right.
say to you and you and you in all of your respective places.
Amen.
So, Skipper, We got as far in our story as Ragged Island. I think you
yes.
talked about how the helicopters then came after the MiG fighters, because the MiG fighters came and visited their catastrophe upon the HMBS Flamingo. She had sunk. Commander Amos Rule had taken command of the captured craft. All of the prisoners were still with you.
Of course they were.
And you took the prisoners with you to Ragged Island.
Yes, we took good care of them, actually.
Oh, yeah? Did you give them tea and crumpets?
We gave them everything we ate, we
yes.
gave them.
Okay.
We took good care of them. But we got to where we went into the police station, mm-hmm. and we alerted the police as to what transpired the evening before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was still dark. It was early in the morning, so it was dark, and the aircraft hadn't returned yet. But when the sun came up, mm-hmm. the aircraft returned over Duncantown, Ragged Island.
This is Sunday morning.
Sunday morning.
Okay.
Mother's Day.
Okay.
They arrived on the beach. It was also, we were also informed that one of the helicopters landed down by the beach where we had berthed, well, ran the fishing boat aground. And the individuals got off and were walking around the fishing boat and looking at it. And everything started after that. Of course, we had alerted New Providence by then. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what was happening here, but I guess everyone was galvanizing and starting to mobilize and get moving.
Mm-hmm.
And that morning, in the early hours of the morning, the MiG aircraft returned.
Mm. Over Ragged Island.
Over Duncantown, Ragged Island.
Wow.
Flying very low. And I don't know if anyone has ever had that experience, to experience the flight of a fighter aircraft flying low overhead.
Mm-hmm.
There's an after boom,
mm-hmm.
which goes off, and it's full of echoes, so it kind of shakes everything around. And this was actually taking shingles off of the roofs of persons' homes there in Ragged Island.
So this is almost like visited tyranny,
yes,
upon the people of Ragged
Listen
Island.
Listen to me. It was a real sad event, mm-hmm. because I felt bad about going to Ragged Island after I saw what was happening. I said, now, if we hadn't come to Ragged Island, these old people here and the kids would not be so terrified and so afraid for their lives with what was transpiring from the pilot,
mm-hmm.
with the pilots on the aircraft. And they were flying up and down, just flying back and forth, flying back and forth. And it continued for a while,
mm-hmm.
quite a while. Eventually, we were able to get an aircraft in with the Commodore at the time, who was William Swinley.
Mr. Swinley.
The first Commodore for the Royal Bahamas Defense
Force. An Englishman.
He was an Englishman.
Mm-hmm.
He was there. He came over initially to set up, assist in setting up and getting the Defense Force up and moving.
Mm-hmm.
He was the Commodore at the time, and of course, the Commissioner of Police was Commissioner Salatio Thompson.
Yeah.
After nine, I think it was, an aircraft arrived bringing them into Duncantown, Ragged Island.
A private aircraft?
Yes.
Yeah. What was the thought around that?
The thought around it was we were just happy to see some other people flying around out of the mm-hmm. the Cuban aircraft, mm-hmm. because that was a friendly face.
Okay.
With all of the stuff going on in the area. And they got off the aircraft. I think it was flown by this guy out of Exuma.
Okay.
Nixon, I think his name.
Okay.
Was. He was a Nixon.
Okay.
I'm sure he was a Nixon. Because he was a very famous pilot around that time. I think he was the one who brought the aircraft in.
Mm.
And
did the police not have planes?
Back then?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but I don't think so.
Okay.
They could have had one, but the commissioner of police came in on that aircraft.
On a private plane?
Also, yes.
Okay.
He came in on that aircraft. And they met with Amos Rowell. Like I told you, I was a junior man. I wasn't in on any of those meetings.
Yeah, junior so, buck private Joe Snuffy.
Yeah, I couldn't get a shot as to what was going on.
Now, I had asked Captain Allens, as a sub-lieutenant, as the executive officer of Flamingo, seeing his commander, the Commodore, get off the plane, you know, mm-hmm. what was it like for him? I imagine you as a Marine seaman in an entirely different capacity. One of the reasons commanders visit the scene is because commanders bring with them a level of hope. After being sure that, after having the whole incident in the dory, what was it like seeing Commodore Swinley? Did that do anything for you?
It was refreshing to see him.
Mm-hmm.
He and both the commissioner of the police. And they came, but I quickly realized they were kind of deep in the water like we were.
Yeah, okay.
There was nothing much they could have done,
mm-hmm.
because those aircraft were still having their way and flying. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't get a sense of satisfaction from seeing them, because all I kind of realized quickly was that these were two other bodies added to the possible body count. What was about to transpire, right? So I said, boy, this isn't good. But eventually, everything continued on right into the early afternoon.
Mm.
Into the early afternoon.
So this is almost 48 hours of...
Yes.
Okay.
Harassment by Cuban aircraft.
Okay.
Nonstop.
Right, because people think that the Flamingo incident is 10 minutes or 15 minutes and it's over. No, this is a prolonged,
continuation
yeah. right.
of harassment by the Cuban aircraft.
As we say, shingles are blowing from the rooftops in Ragged Island.
Yeah, that's how low the aircraft were flying when they were flying over Ragged Island. And those old ladies were terrified. Some were crying, right? I guess I didn't cry because I was all cried out. So
you're probably too tired to cry.
Yeah, but, you know, that carried on into the early afternoon. And it could have been around 2-3. We saw some, I think they were F-111s come over, a small group of F-111s, about three of them flying together.
Are those American planes?
Yes.
Okay.
They were American aircraft, fighter aircraft. And for some reason, I don't know, there must be a language that speaks silently between aircraft fighters. When they showed up, the Cuban aircraft all disappeared. You know, like when the big boy come on the block, everybody else quiet down and just...
They say a bull always know when a bigger bull reach.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they, when the American aircraft flew over, all of the Cuban aircraft disappeared.
Okay.
I guess they flew back to Cuba because they didn't want to confront what was out there at the time. And then we made arrangements to be transported into New Providence that afternoon.
Sure.
You know, we did all our pleasantries with all the people in Ragged Island and everything when things simmered down. And we were flown into New Providence that afternoon.
How does it feel, Captain, having to now get into a plane, all right, and you know that MiG fighters aren't out of reach. You've seen the damage that they can cause. And now you're going, I mean, it is one thing to be in the water and unable to evade them. I think you stand a better chance on land in trying to evade them, but I would imagine you stand absolutely no chance in the air.
And, you know, it was a perplexing feeling. It was a perplexing feeling. I said, boy, now if these aircraft come back with them.
Right, what you do up here in the air?
There's nowhere in this aircraft. There's nothing you can do.
Right.
You're just sitting ducks. But fortunately for us, God was good. We had a flight that was not troubled by anything. And we arrived in New Providence.
How long is the flight, do you remember?
From Ragged Island to New Providence, it was well over an hour, I'm sure. Okay. It was over an hour because the aircraft itself was like a DC, one of those DC type aircraft.
Okay.
So it wasn't a really fast aircraft. So we were just sitting there listening to the hum of the engine and everybody was finding comfort in their own thoughts, I'm sure, like I did.
How soaked is everybody with emotion? I guess, you know, you always want to go back and make sure that you were sure you saw nothing, right?
Yes.
The entire sinking of the Flamingo had already happened. The search had already been done. Of course, not in standard or in keeping with international search protocols because you weren't in an international search protocol kind of situation. This was a life or death situation.
It was.
So you had to search, sure. But, you know, searches would last 48 hours and then there would be a recovery 24 hours after that, et cetera. That protocol wasn't followed simply because it couldn't be followed.
No, because we had nothing to use and we had to get out of there. We had to get off the scene, you
right.
see? So the initial search that was conducted was all that we did.
Right. And so do you have it in your mind as you're riding in the plane, possibly flying over, do you ever think to yourself, man, you know, maybe if I look down
they could
now.
Be swimming down there. Yeah. You know, and even now, you know, even now, because I've had quite a few trips down to Key Santo Domingo. Like, I worked on many boats, traveled down there many times afterwards. Even now, I still look to see if anyone is swimming.
42 years later.
Yeah, because closure is something that the human mind has to come to grips with. And if you don't have a complete closure on a situation, that's why I feel so badly when I see parents on the television and pleading for people to help them find their loved ones that are missing. I said, boy, this is not going to be good. This is a really sad situation because in order to get closure, you got to have something tangible.
You need a physical, yeah.
Yeah, you must have something tangible. And if you don't get something tangible, the mental closer, it never happens.
So, sir, tell me, unlike the rest of your crew, largely from New Providence, you are an island boy from Harbor Island.
Yes.
You get to Nassau, there isn't any massive crowd waiting on you. Who's waiting at the airport?
For me? There was nobody waiting for me. I jumped on the Defense Force bus and went down to the base. where they well, they took all of us there.
Right.
Because my aunt at the time, she was not a person to really be interactive with people. Mm-hmm. She always liked to be by herself. Mm-hmm. Through Lily the Valley Corner, smoke a pipe, sit down and relax. She never got mm-hmm. too flustered with people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was a very depressing time for me. Mm-hmm. And only with my sustenance and God's help, I was able to get over that mentally, because I looked at a lot of my shipmates afterwards and a lot of people were not well. Mm-hmm. And psychologically, maybe I'm not well, I don't know. But, you know, there was no concern about the psychological welfare of the persons that.
So no post-trauma anything?
No post-trauma anything. In fact, during that time, we had to wait months to get reimbursement for our personal possessions, and we still were not reimbursed for all. Mm. And it was a really sad situation, you know. You know, you've given up. Some people give up everything, make the ultimate sacrifice, mm-hmm. and then you're still not looked at in a humanistic kind of way. Mm.
But I imagine the time comes, sir, where there is the ceremonial functions that follow. Presentation of your awards. The list starts being circulated about who will be given what award. The list is now printed. Whitfield Neely is going to be awarded a Medal of Gallantry for his performance mm-hmm. in the HMBS Flamingo. It must have been a proud time.
Well, that award, you know, I wish we could have done something posthumously mm-hmm. for those four Marines that lost their lives during the incident. Mm-hmm. But that award coming to me, I was very proud of it, mm-hmm. you know, and I looked at it and I said, boy, that's what you get. You get your little piece of metal when you're involved in situations. Mm-hmm. But I was a proud bearer of it and I wear it proudly even now, you know, but I don't know. It doesn't feel complete to me. Mm. You know, that award came, I got it. My shipmates got the
traumatic service,
mm-hmm. the Purple Heart, they call it. I also got a traumatic service. And the captain got, I think he got an MBE, a member of the British Empire Medal, for okay. his role with the sinking of the Flamingo. Mm-hmm. And those were the only awards that were given. And then after that, everything just went.
Sunny die.
Yeah. Mm. hum. It just was a hum. Every year you just have the celebration. Mm-hmm. But.
And for a long time, it had only really been a Coral Harbor thing. Like right. It wasn't anything national. I think these few years has possibly been the most outside of Coral Harbor display of the story that was. I don't recall
I noticed that the Bohemian public has passion for the story now, mm-hmm. right? Because we had one Commodore Clifford Scavala. He was a real soldier, still is, I'm sure.
Yeah.
He was all out with supporting the sinking of the Flamingo epitaph.
Yeah.
He built a monument in Coral Harbor,
right?
Which was a good gesture, good idea, because mm-hmm. I know for him to build it uptown, we would have to get property and everything. Mm-hmm. But he wanted to do it then, so he did it.
Yeah. And I remember that being one of the things that he very arduously attended to. Like the Commodore's yes. hand itself was on the building of the Flamingo.
Yes, and yeah. it was really received kindly mm-hmm. by the persons that were involved in the incident.
Yeah.
I could see it on their faces, and they felt special. Mm-hmm. And basically, after the monument, you know, persons wanted to get involved with it. Some persons made it about themselves. Some persons made it about the parents and the fallen comrades. Mm-hmm. But somehow I gather that my shipmates, they don't feel satisfied and complete mm-hmm. with how it was dealt with. You know, and it's unfortunate, I must admit here, I have not spoken to some of them for years. Mm. I don't even know who some of them are. There were 19 of us on the ship. 8 persons have deceased. So mm-hmm. that means there are
about 11 of you all. Yeah.
So there are 10 others beside me. Mm-hmm. I don't see anyone now.
And the general age among you all should be about 60, thereabout.
Kirby would have been the youngest one. Mm. And I would have been somewhere around there with Kirby. So they should all be like 63.
Okay.
63, 65, 68, numbers like that.
Okay.
We're getting aged now.
so tell us a little bit more about the sojourn between life post the incident back into, you know, now having to be assigned a new billet, possibly that new billet being another ship. It is rumored that there are people in the Defense Force that immediately left after the HMBS Flamingo. There were people that toe the line at the gate to join.
Yes.
How did it feel to be inspiring a nation at that level where enlistments in the Royal Bahamas Defense Force had probably been at its highest during your tenure that far, and yeah, knowing that it was the Flamingo that kind of motivated that?
Like I said yesterday, the Flamingo, the sinking of the Flamingo, mm-hmm, showed a Bahamian populace that has not been seen since the sinking of the Flamingo. Mm-hmm. Everyone was on one page. Everyone felt the same way. Everyone had the same opinion as to what they thought should happen, mm-hmm, and how they thought we should deal with it. Mm-hmm. And we were a unified nation because of the sinking of the Flamingo. Almost 7 years into being independent, we had been faced with this real drastic incident. Yeah. But it galvanized Bahamians to really show off that Bahamian colors. Mm-hmm. Our Bahamian colors were flying high. Mm-hmm. There was not one head bowed, neither was there anyone whispering about anything.
You were all glossy-eyed.
And we were all speaking with one voice.
Yeah.
You heard the echo when the Bahamian spoke back during
how
that time.
How closely did you follow it in the news?
I followed it as best I could.
Okay.
Because, you know, back then we didn't have all the Gucci products you have now, like Facebook,
yeah,
Twitter,
yeah,
our emails, yeah, and 96.9 radio and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was only newspaper.
We had ZNS. And most times it was ZNS1 if you didn't have a Gucci radio system. Yeah. You listened to 1540. But I followed it best we could. And I also read about it in the newspapers. Mm. I tried to keep abreast as to what was happening with the negotiations with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the government, the Cuban government, the back and forth. Mm-hmm. Right up to the time when they made the final solution, Cubans paid for the boat, paid for the lives of the Marines that were lost. And that was it. Full stop. No more payment.
Mm.
Right? But you asked me about the
posting. Just before we get past that. So if I remember the negotiations correctly, it was $5 million, I think, for the boat.
Yeah.
And $100,000
for each Marine.
Yeah. Or $2 million for the boat. $5 million for the boat.
And $100,000
for each lost life.
Right.
Okay. But nothing for the man that had suffered the trauma.
No.
Okay.
No money for no psychological evaluation or anything.
And this was as a result of the meeting that they had with the United Nations.
Right.
Okay.
There was a lot of negotiation, I said, international negotiation, mm-hmm, because everyone cried shame on the Cubans for their acts, mm-hmm, they perpetrated towards a peaceful country like the Bahamas.
Right.
Right? And of course, you know, calm heads had to prevail.
And leading that team would have been, I think at the time, the Honorable Paul Adley.
For the negotiation for the Bahamas.
The Prime Minister at the
yeah,
time, Sir
and
Lyndon.
Darrell Rule. Right. He was around with that.
Now, here's another question I have for you. The Prime Minister wasn't in country
He was in England.
Right.
He was in England to a conference.
Right.
I think it was the heads of government.
So a country under 7 years old comes under active fire. Its leader of the country isn't in the Commonwealth.
No.
Right? It isn't like he's in Andros. He is on the other side of the world giving an address at... What was it?
I think it was at the heads of... the Commonwealth heads,
heads of government.
Government.
Yeah, right? And I think this becomes Lady Pinling's introduction to public life.
Public speaking.
Because she has to deliver the address.
She had to deliver the address.
On behalf of Sir Lyndon.
Right.
And so, are you aware of all of this? I mean,
At the time, mm-hmm, but I found out because, you know, like I told you, you know, it was difficult getting news, mm-hmm, at the snap of a finger like that. You had to keep reading and keep observing what was going on. Mm-hmm. you know. So I found out about that later on, of course, that the prime minister had to come back and, you know, but he was always surrounded with a strong group of men. So there was not like any shortage of leadership in the Bahamas with his departure, you know. But we spoke about me as to my posting afterwards.
Right.
And that's when I got to meet Sir Lyndon, because I was posted to work at the cabinet office.
Okay.
As a messenger slash wipe this down, pick this up.
Right.
Whatever it was, right?
Sedentary duties.
Yes, sedentary duties. Nice word. And I was able to interact with quite a bit of persons, including Sir Lyndon Oscar Findlay. Mm. You know, usually on Fridays we had a lunch and everyone was there. It was a usual gathering for all the persons who worked on that floor, the second floor, where his office was. And he often came out and engaged me in conversation concerning the incident. So I got to speak to him quite a bit about it.
Okay.
You know, he and Miss Yvonne Johnson and the team that was up there at the time. I spoke to them often about it and interacted with them. It was a really enlightening experience for me being up there with them.
Well, Skipper, let me tell you what I want to do. I want to open the phone lines. There are people that are going to want to talk to you. We've got about 20 minutes left. You can give me a call. The number is 323-6232-325-4316, 325-4259. I have a text right here saying, sir, that the name of the pilot would have been Kenneth Nixon.
Nixon, yeah, that's
Kenneth
right.
Kenneth Nixon that would have flown you, flew you guys on the Ragged Island.
Mr. Nixon. I met him just, I think about 3 years ago I met Mr. Nixon. I didn't remember his first name. My apologies. But his name is Kenneth. That's right.
Kenneth Nixon.
Yes.
Yeah. You can also send me a text at 422-4796. Someone is also saying it would be quite interesting to hear the Cuban fisherman side of the story. Why were you all so nice to the Cuban fishermen? I mean, they had almost just caused you your life.
Yeah, but remember now, we have a responsibility. And there are rules of engagement that all soldiers must adhere to. And if you compromise those rules of engagements or even go afoul on them, you now leave yourself liable. Okay? You cannot just go and hurt someone because someone is hurting you. That's not the solution. And we were responsible, and the welfare of those arrested Cuban fishermen was resting with us. We had to ensure that we got them to safety more than we got ourselves to safety.
Yeah.
Because we didn't want those questions coming at us. Well, what happened to the fifth fisherman or the fourth fisherman?
Right.
We had to put them on the plane before we got on the plane.
But it would also speak, though, to the deportment of the skipper. Commander Rule.
Right.
Right.
Because he was always our officer in charge.
Yeah.
And he never perpetrated ill will towards anyone. So it would have shocked me to see him saying, well, let's do this.
Let's rest one.
That.
Rest one on them.
No, he wouldn't do that. He always stood for right.
I see the phone lines are lighting up, so let's take a couple of these phone calls. Good morning, caller. You're on. Caller, you there?
Yes, Mr. Miller, how are you?
I'm well.
Good afternoon to you. I mean, good morning to your guest.
Good morning, sir.
I knew the story in 1980 about the Defense Force. I remember that very well. The name that I think there's earlier, the name of the pilot is Kenneth Uncle, the late Norman Nixon, who was born in. Kenneth is the nephew of Norman Nixon.
Okay, well.
So Norman is the late Norman Nixon.
Okay.
That's the pilot.
Norman was the senior man.
Yes, sir.
Okay, sir.
Kenneth's still alive, but Norman was the pilot.
Okay.
Thank you. Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Let's take another call. Good morning, caller. You're on. Call you there?
Yes.
Hey, how are you? You live?
Okay. I'm how you doing, man?
I'm well. How are you?
What a wonderful show.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask the gentleman. At the age of 18, that's how old I was when I learned of the incident. I wanted to ask him. Did that cause him to love his country more? And also, too, training session. Did it become more intense? I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you very much. 323-6232-325-4316, 325-4259. What happened as a result of the incident regarding training?
Training with the Defense Force.
Did they alter any of the training evolutions?
Mind you, training with the Defense Force was a real... The incipient stages of training in the Defense Force was done by an Englishman named Peter Basher, Lieutenant Peter Basher. And like everything else, as it progresses, it becomes more intense, it becomes more involved. So to answer his question, I would say that our training definitely changed. And even now, the training is, the metamorphosis of change is happening often. Training always changes. And then, you know, when incidents occur, it teaches you how to prevent them happening again or how to avoid getting involved in them.
Testing.
So our training, yes, our training has always metamorphosed, changed for the positive.
All right, let's take another call. Good morning, Collie. You're on. Collie, you there?
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Boy, Dr. Whitfield, Charlie here.
Hey, Charlie.
Well, listen, I have two hard ones for you. I got the impression listening that you had accepted your fate at some point. And I want to know what that must have felt like. And also, seeing that you have been through something very catastrophic, and the country seems to be going through a number of catastrophes, how, if you were running this system, would you do anything differently to manage us out of the crisis? I would love to hang up and listen to you.
Why are you why are you trying to engage me in the political response, Charlie? You know I'm not going to do that. See me offline, and we'll talk about it.
323-623-2323-254-316. 325-4259. Someone here says, Mr. Miller, I salute those brave men from the Flamingo. Williams, a Lewis Street boy, was a schoolmate of mine. Yeah. Commander Amos Rowell, may he rest in peace, deserved to be a national hero posthumously for his conduct under fire and saving most of the crew despite losing his ship. He was given an MBE, which you now also are the holder of an MBE.
That. Yes, yes.
What does it feel like?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, to be mentioned in that line of persons, it makes you feel worthy. But it also leaves an empty spot in my stomach because I think about my other shipmates. And I hope it makes them feel satisfied that my name is representing all of us. I'm not just gathering these awards just for me. Everything I get, I always owe it to them, and I often say to myself, but for them, there would I be. You understand what I'm saying? So I like to make it mental for me that I include them in all of my awards and decorations.
Would you like to see a bit of a memorialization of the incident in some way or shape or form? Like, I don't know, like if they were able to maybe make a life-size replica of the Flamingo at the roundabout at Coral Harbor, or if there was, if you could think about a way to memorialize it that was prominent enough for people to see it visibly every day so that we may never forget. What exactly?
You know, we often speak of it, right? Even May 10th. May 10th, the day. I don't think, and it's maybe because of our own fault. When I say our own fault, the persons that were on the ship, there is not much mention of the incident as much as I think ought to happen, right? And everything happens on May 10th.
Right.
We have elections. People go about their merry way. Not even a mention of my fallen comrades and the persons who even fell afterwards because some people got sick.
Right.
And just to have it more out there. And I'm a bit responsible too because people say, oh, you got to write a book. But books happen with time.
Right.
And the right time is the right time.
Correct.
Okay. And but we need to have it more indelible in the mindset of the young people to let them know that, you know, the Bahamas just didn't happen.
Right.
Even just recently, people had to lay down their lives for what you consider is a normalcy in your life, moving about on safe streets and not having to worry or look up overhead for anything. And people did it before that, of course. I respect that also.
Sure.
But during May 10th, 1980, people laid down their lives for the safety and the security that you take for granted now. And I think it's incumbent upon our educators to put some of it out there, mention it. You know, there is enough on the incident now that they can research and put something together for a period in a history class.
And all you and your shipmates still have pretty good command of your mental faculties. So, I mean, the story is still alive.
It's still alive.
Right.
It's still alive. And persons ought to be told about it and educated concerning it. Mm. You see?
There's a text right here, sir, that says, "Hi, I love this topic. We must be a Christian nation. The Cubans sink a ship, shot at helpless Marines in water, caused the death of 4, but we love the Cubans. That's God. That's a God kind of love." This here also says, "Hi, what a good day for the second job. General elections were held in the Bahamas on May 10, 2017. You're very correct. I think it was a fatal flaw by the administration at that time. That is Levin Miller's personal position. I remember my schoolmate, Eddie Williams, and big up to Denzel Clark from Jeff Fowler. Eddie Williams, what were they like? Were they very popular guys? Because, you know, there's some guys join the ship's complement and they're like hermits. You never really see them. And then there are some people that get on board the ship. And the minute they get there, they're vivacious, they're bombastic.
I'll tell you what. Eddie Williams was a really reserved individual, even with his speech, his movement and everything.
Mm-hmm.
He was quiet. He was very reticent, just quiet. And he spoke,
mm-hmm.
but you had to engage him.
Mm-hmm.
But he was always a squared away person who always completed the task. He never was a slacker.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was no space in the Defense Force for slackers around that time.
Yeah, you had to pull your weight.
You had to pull your weight.
There was nowhere to hide.
Everybody had to work.
Yeah.
You know, but he was a nice guy.
Sure.
Off of East Street, like the president said, Lewis Street.
Mm-hmm.
Right behind the Pelican Bar there.
Yeah.
On Lewis Street and East Street.
Text right here says $5 million for a boat and $100,000 per life loss sounds like garbage negotiations. How do we value lives lost and lives affected less than a boat? Well,
but you got to remember that was in 1980.
Yeah, the negotiations were a whole lot different.
The value of $100,000 back then
was a bit different.
Much different than it would be today.
Good morning to you and your guests. You are doing a wonderful job reminding our country what it is our armed services, including the police force, did and gave for us. And still do. I pray Bahamians don't denigrate it by dragging colors into it politically. Let's take some more calls, Skipper. Good morning, caller. You're on. Caller, you there?
Yes, good morning, sir.
How are you?
Good morning to the Van Twas Captain here.
Captain Whitfield Neely, yes.
Yeah. I was compelled to call on that Sunday, which was Mother's Day. I was a young police officer stationed at Central Police Station when they brought those Cubans in where they were detained. After that incident. So, you know, it's just something. I just hope that in the not too distant future that whoever the government is, they see the right to have those officers be honored as national heroes, because they were, in fact, as a matter of fact, Stirrup, I knew Stirrup personally. I met him being a year or two older than he was. And we always communicated because I was waking up the Grove Police Station at that time. So, you know,
those men
give their life and for this country, and there's no other way that they ought not to have been elevated to that status. And I trust and pray that through your agitation and the public that we can get that done before our 50th anniversary.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much, sir.
Call, are you there?
Hello.
Yeah, you said you work at the Central Station the day of the incident?
I was a police officer.
What was the mood among police officers that day?
Oh, the mood. Let me tell you, we were on one accord. Listen, I escorted them to the cell block, and trust me, I really felt like I should have caused them harm, but I realized the situation, and then we had senior officers who made sure that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I tell you, that was indeed a feeling. Trust me, we were on one accord. Just like you said, the country was united.
Yep.
And we sung the same song. When the persons came to have some discussion with Sir Lyndon and those at the post office on East Street, I remember that like yesterday.
Yes.
We had a large crowd, I mean, swole all over. Everybody marched to the general post office to know what would be the outcome of that decision. So I can tell you, the Bahamas was united as one.
The only time
on
I've
that
seen
time,
it.
On that day. So what the captain is saying is actually correct. I could confirm that.
Appreciate
you,
sir.
Thank you very much, sir.
Let's take another call. Thank Good morning, you. Caller. You're on. Not there. 323-622-3232-54-316-325-4259. You can give us a call. Captain Ely is my guest. We're talking about the days during and after
the sinking of the Flamingo.
The HMBS Flamingo. Does it ever did it ever cross your mind that maybe this wasn't for you? How do you
working under the fence for?
Yeah, how did you still go 38 years beyond that day? Like, did you ever say to yourself, "Boy, they didn't shoot at me," and quite honestly, I signed up to get shoot at, but not from a plane.
I'll tell you, many times I've had reason to just say, "Boy, I'm shutting it down, I'm moving on." Mm-hmm. Many times. But like I said yesterday, the Royal Bahamas Defense Force is something. You have to live it to experience
it. She's like the first girl you've ever loved.
It's like drugs.
Yeah, I've never been a drug addict, but
I see it all the time in media. Mm-hmm. It's something that gets in you. And you continue. And then every day, you just roll from day to day to day. Mm-hmm. And every day is different. That's what makes it so addictive.
Yeah.
Every day is different. You don't spend any 2 days doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. So every day is exciting. And I always loved working on the Defense Force.
Did you ever think you would live long enough to see yourself coming from Marine Seaman Whitfield Neely? Did you ever think you'd have a career spanning long enough to see yourself from the days of being a Marine Seaman to now being in a rank more senior than the commander of your ship at that time?
I didn't envision it. No, I didn't. Mm. I didn't. But as I got a little more matured with my service, I started making plans mentally. So I started stepping in certain directions to get myself out there. So I can, if something was to happen, I will not miss it because I didn't act initially. Mm. So I started going to school and doing different things to get myself out there to ensure that if it was offered or if it was mentioned.
Yeah, there would be no impediments.
There would be no impediments. They couldn't find an excuse not to give it to
me. We've got time for one more call. Let's take one more. Good morning, caller. You're on. Not there.
He's gone.
Yep.
But the Defense Forces, I would recommend all young men and women. Mm-hmm.
Because we've got space for them now.
Yeah, those...
During these days, there were no women in the Defense Force.
No, sir.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Only Miss Kobe. Only Miss Kobe, the secretary for the Commander Defense Force. But I would recommend to all persons leaving high school, get your qualifications, 5 BJCs or BGCSEs. Mm-hmm. And most times when you're leaving high school... 99.9 times out of 10, you don't know what you want to do.
Yeah.
Get on the Defense Force. Get on the police force. Do something positive. Yeah. Don't hang around.
We'll make a man out of you for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see if we can squeeze this one in. Good morning, caller. You're on. You've got about 30 seconds. Caller, you there? I think I can hear you. Caller, you there?
I'm on.
Okay, how are you?
I'm fine.
You live?
Yeah, okay. Hello.
Hi.
Yes, what I wanted to talk about, that William fellow was my cousin, Sam Williams.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking from Bahamas Love and Care. I think those fellows was a national hero.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
they
sir.
Need to get on the money.
I completely endorse that, actually. I had actually
put them on the money for me, please.
I had actually,
please do that for me. Write that down now.
You can go and Google this. There's a piece written by Levin Miller called 41 Cents of Sacrifice.
I'm not very at ease right now.
No,
make
I'm saying.
Make a note of that for me, please.
But I
put them on the money.
No problem. Thank you very much. I have agitated the same. Let's take one more call. Good morning, caller. You're on.
Hello?
Hey, how are you?
Good morning.
Yes, I'm Kenneth Nixon's daughter.
Yes, ma'am. How are you?
Turn your radio down for me.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Kenneth Nixon's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Out of Exuma.
I was 6 years old when Officer Gary Roll came and got my father out of his bed to fly into Ragged Island, and the MiGs had to force them to land.
Right.
Him and Gary Roll, he said, hid under the bushes. Uncle Norman and Uncle Harry came into Ragged Island after the MiGs went to go and get refueled.
Mm,
so the gentleman who said Uncle Norman came in there, he has part of the story.
Mm.
Yeah. Gary Roll is an undertaker now, right?
Gary Roll is the officer that was in charge of Exuma at the time. Mm.
But he now, currently he works with a funeral home, doesn't he?
Yes, Gary Roll works with a funeral home.
Very nice gentleman. I met him.
Which is Amos Roll's nephew.
Right, I met him at Amos Roll funeral.
Yes,
really
I appreciate
nice fellow.
That
we spoke
very
about
much.
It. We did speak about it.
So we are flat out of time.
Thank you, Leon.
We are flat out of time. It's always good to have you. The time goes so quickly when you're here.
It does.
Yeah.
The time flies in here. I don't know. I wish I had this clock on the outside.
Oh, yeah? Thank you so much again for coming, sir, because I mean, we're trying to get this on record. I'm so happy to have you here with me this morning. There my music is. Mm-hmm. I'm Leon Miller. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. It's your station for fresh news and smart talk. Don't move. They've got the news. It's next. Oh,